Namaste and welcome. It's good to see you all here. It's nice to see the new faces. The way that the satsang works is very informal. If you have a question, specific questions or topics you'd like to hear about, you just write it out and you put it in the satsang bowl, and that's what gets spoken on. There are no canned speeches here. So we go through the questions or topics of the day, and then we take a quick break, have some tea, and then we come back for meditation time. And welcome to the two new people that have taken the Diksha. So I hope that your path unfolds greatly from this point forward. Okay. Without further ado, we'll begin. How do we know what is an obstacle or just a natural something? Whose question is this? Okay. How do we know if it's an obstacle? Okay. Obstacles are natural somethings. There's really no difference between an obstacle and a natural something other than the mind and the mental attachment to it as being an obstacle. Okay. So, we use the symbol of the yin-yang. Okay. In the dark part, you see a seed of light. In the light part, you see a seed of dark. It just depends on where your focus is. Okay. It can be an obstacle or it can be an opportunity for growth. Okay. And the illustration I use for this is a wealthy man loses everything that he has. And when he loses all of his wealth, then he begins to really search for the spiritual path. And he gains realization. So was it bad fortune? Was it really an obstacle that he had lost all of that? On the flip side of it, a poor man wins a lottery, gains a lot of money. With that, he becomes arrogant, obnoxious, and falls. So was it good fortune really for him to win the lottery? Okay. So if it's a trial or whatever comes in your life, can either be a hindrance or it can be a boon to you, just depending on what is your focal point regarding it. Okay. Doesn't mean that if you win the lottery, you're going to fall. But he could have turned around and used that to improve society, to improve, you know. So it just depends. It depends on, like anything, wherever your attention is and your focus and the mindset about it makes all the difference. Okay. Obstacles are not usually obstacles per se. They're there to teach you something, something you can get from it, something you can learn from it, maybe a starting point to go deeper within yourself and your own quest. Okay. This is why we have the one of the deities we have here, the Kali, we use that imagery, okay, that symbology. Because Kali is there and she looks very fearsome, okay? She's standing here with a severed head in the hand and wearing these skulls, tongue hanging out. You know? What's she there? What was she? She was manifested out of all of these things to fight what? To fight ego, okay? To fight the negativity, to fight the ego. And anytime we're going on this path, we face our fears. Part of it is facing your fears. Fears can be quite threatening, you know, when you look at it. It's like looking at Kali, okay? You see this and it's like immediate reaction. But if you surrender and then you just face it and you go through it, you find out that it was really illusory in the end. Okay? There was really nothing to fear. It's only your own mental conditioned ideas that you have that cause this reluctance to arise and this fear state to arise. Okay? So everything that comes is an opportunity for you in one way or another. Okay? Even the greatest tragedies in our lives are really kind of an opportunity for us to be able to dig deeper. I know it was so in my own case. A lot of traumas, a lot of tragedy, things I went through really were a jumping off point for digging deeper, to looking beyond that and to what held that in place. And the only thing that held that continued dynamic in place was my own attention to it, my own fear of it, my own wanting to make it different, my own, you know. So once we can let go of that, we move forward. So whatever comes is an opportunity. Try not to see it as an obstacle, because then you just simply create it into being an obstacle. Okay. There is an inner guru and an outer guru. The inner guru manifests the outer guru. What if there is a conflict or a disagreement between the two? How or why could there be conflict between two to one? There can't be. Simply, there can't be. If they're really a guru, if they're really a sat guru, then they live within that divine essence or that absolute. So how can there be conflict? There can't be. Reality is reality. And once you've gone beyond the mundane mind and mundane world, and you step into that absolute, and it dissolves that personal sense, that conditioned self-awareness, what remains is only that reality. It's paramount. You can't dispute it. It simply is. So where satgurus speak from is from that inherent reality of that divine essence, which is within everyone, everything. Okay. If it didn't have the divine essence in it, it wouldn't have life. I know now for people that are still in the mind of duality, it's a philosophy, okay? It's a belief system. But for the one that's a satguru, it's no longer a belief system. It's not a philosophy. It's a living reality. Just as you look and you see and you touch this floor and you know to you it's real, to the satguru, the absolute, the divine essence, has more reality than this floor, beyond dispute. And so this is what they speak from. That's why we say, you know, karma and all of these laws and whatever Christ spoke about, why are they in place? Because it's the divine nature of the absolute. So these laws are inherent, indisputable. You can't get around it. When the ultimate truth is that purity, then the rest of the laws, it has to be in place. It can't be otherwise. What did you have something else you want to say?
Maybe not online. Do the Christian mystics like St. John of the Cross, do they make more of a distinction between creator and createe than the Eastern thought?
No, not really. It's like St. John of the Cross said. And St. John of the Cross, you have to realize he was born during the Inquisition time. And I know he was realized because he said, I've entered the unknowing that's beyond all knowledge. That's realization. That's stepping into the absolute. It's the same cognition for anyone that reaches to that level, whether it's Christian path, Hindu path, Buddhist path. Buddhist path, they say they've entered the void, the pregnant void. And when they say void, they don't mean something that has no value or something that's, you know, this gaping nothingness. It's pregnant. It's full potential. It simply is. Okay? So it's the same. Whether it's St. John of the Cross that says, I've entered the unknowing that's beyond all knowledge, or whether it's the Hindu that says, I've entered into the absolute, into Parta Brahman, that which is beyond form, that light which is beyond lights, okay? It doesn't matter. Because the one that lives in that reality understands what the others are speaking of. It's the same cognition. It can't really be given out intellectually. It has to be something that's experienced directly. Okay. In the moment when you step into the absolute, there's no you, there's no world, there's no nothing except for that. And it's not you that's seeing it. And this is what's really hard to explain. How can that be? It's not something you're seeing. You're not seeing something at that point. That's why I say it's a spirit. It's not something that has no form, but it simply is. And it has more reality and validity than anything in this world. You can't dispute it once that's been stepped into. And your life is changed in one instant at that moment. Who and what you were before you went into that experience is gone. That suffering persona is gone. It's at an end, finished, done. Before I went into that experience, I was severe depression, post-traumatic stress, kundalini, everything you could think of I was going through. Miserable person. Suffered for a lot of years, was great suffering. And the moment that experience came, that was the end of it. And it's been the end of it. And it has not come back in any way, shape, or form. This was in 99 that this occurred. And now there is no relationship to who that suffering person was. Even trying to think back, it's very difficult to understand what was that mindset of suffering at that time. Things change so radically. Okay. So yeah, inner guru, outer guru, it's the same. It's when these layers and coverings that you've collected that make you feel separate, when these things are gone, then there's that clarity, and it comes in one moment. Of course, it can take a lifetime to reach that one moment, but it comes in one moment, and then your life is totally changed. Okay. So no, inner guru and outer guru cannot be different. Unless it's somebody that's a lower guru, that's a teacher of sorts, and still is in duality, then yes, of course. But a satguru that lives within that reality, no. Okay. In healing, what is meant by the phrase picking up things from the mass mind? How do we not pick up things from the mass mind? Well, it's not that you're picking up things from mass mind. It's that mass mind is kind of a generalized, basic type of, I don't want to say really belief system, But it's these inherent things that we have, you know, like the fears and the things. There are a lot of general things that are kind of out there floating around, okay? And these are part of our genetic, you might say genetic makeup. That's why I call it, it's also a cellular type of a memory. And when we start doing this energetic work, it starts releasing cellular memory, you know? And we collect these things for lifetimes, you know. So this is why it's so important to continue with your path and letting go, releasing. Why I give the balanced breath to do, so that when these things start surfacing, you can just see it and let it go without gravitating to it and making another big drama around it. Okay? So don't worry about you need to protect yourself from mass mind or something. There's nothing you need to protect yourself from. Okay. This idea, you know, well, I need to put this white light around me or something, you know. Did Christ go around saying, oh, I need to put a white light around me, I need to protect myself? No. Why? Because he knows everything comes from God. Everything has that essence within it. There's nothing you need to protect yourself from when you know that there is only this eternal life that goes on. There is really no death. Consciousness goes on. The body falls away, but there's really no death. Okay? You just transition from this plane to the next plane. Okay? So what is there to fear? When God is the basis of everything, and you know that God is the basis of everything, and that which is called evil had its root somewhere in truth, but it's been pulled away from the light which gave it meaning until it becomes unrecognizable. Okay, then it's called evil. Okay, it's called shadows. But really, that has a lot less reality or staying power than does that truth. Okay? Because it's a distortion of truth. It's a distortion. The distortion does not have more validity than the seed essence. Okay? That's why I always say, you know, sin is separation. Sin is ignorance. Okay? You've become separate from knowing that God is also your life. God is what gives you substance. God is what, you know, sustainer of all life. You can't get away from it. If you go to the highest heaven, you go to the deepest hells, it says still you are there. Okay, you can't get away from it. It simply is part and parcel of being, of life.
This is just a tiny bit off the track, but you said that the experience happens in one moment, mm-hmm. And you have mentioned that some people have caught a glimpse of it, but they didn't stay long enough to affect them.
They didn't do enough practices to allow the mind to still. So what happens is they get a glimpse and they come back and then try to make sense of it, try to put it in a box, try to define it. And try to, because it's very scary when you start going in there and you feel like this person that you are is slipping away. It's the best thing that could happen to you, but it's scary at the time, you know, because we think, I need this little prison to keep me safe, not recognizing it's a prison. It's a box of our own creation. And anytime we feel we need to make ourselves safe, then we're not safe. Okay, it's that same thing, you know. We're defining, we're putting closed parameters around, and I'm only safe if this happens or that happens, you know. So, yeah, we create our own prison. We create our own difficulty in
okay.
that.
So the other question is that one satsang you showed a video of an enlightened being who had a problem as far as, like, he wanted to always drift off into the God consciousness, and so he was smoking so he could be grounded and, I guess, serve it and worship it. And
no, you're misunderstanding. That was Nisargadatta. His job was selling bidis, cigarettes. That was his job. He'd smoked for years. The smoking did not lessen his consciousness or awareness of God. It was not something to ground himself. He didn't drift off in somewhere. You're always conscious of it. You're not coming and going in realization. It doesn't come, it doesn't go. It's unchanging constant. It's here all the time. So where are you going to come and go to? The only thing that comes and goes is mind that's in duality. Okay. It's like in realization. When you reach to realization, then you see that this world is like the, we call Shakti. Shakti is movement. Okay, different vibrations create different colors, create different patterns, create different happenings. Okay. So we see the world. Yeah, we see the world. We see many people. Okay. Same. The eyes are registering many people. But we know, you know, in the midst of seeing many people and many stories and many things going on, still we know that that divine seed is there within each person. It's the same. It doesn't matter who that person is. It's absolute potentiality and it's absolute pureness. And it's never touched by anything that happens. This is why when you start letting go of things, grace happens. Okay? It's why when you can dig inside, you can find this. It has to exist there for you to be able to find it. Okay? If it was something you had to strive for and get it and was out there, you'd be up a creek. Okay? But it's always here. Why do you think the Bible says, you know, go within. Go within the closet. Shut the door. Go within. Be still and know that I am God. Be still. Know that I am God. What did Moses say? Who should I say sent me? I am that. I am. I am that. I am. I'm all. I'm here. I simply am. Okay? It simply is. The life of all life, the death of all death, the moment you step into there. No one sees the face of God and lives. Okay? You don't go into that experience and come back the same as what went in. Doesn't mean the body falls away. You're going to die. But what dies is that mind of separation. That's what goes. The idea of needing to be this suffering persona, it goes. Because we see that everything that we've collected has created and continued our suffering. We're the ones that are holding it in place. Doesn't mean that bad things are not going to continue to happen to you. Yeah, you live in this world, okay. But it's transient. And suffering is created by the mind, the mental aversion, the mental desire, the mental wanting, the mental, you know. That's what's creating suffering. Doesn't mean that pain's not going to come. Yeah, physical body, you might have pain. But you know the body's transient. And you know absolutely there is no death. Because it's been experienced, this divine. So the fear goes. And with the fear goes this suffering attitude. It goes. You enter into a totally different awareness, a different consciousness. Okay. In a healing, why does the person being healed make odd sounds? A lot of times, it depends on what's coming up. They can be having emotional releases. Okay. If you're connecting and they're starting to have another type of a release and you're really connected, you'll hear a big sigh. You know. Or they can have tears, spontaneous tears were coming. You move to another area of the body, you touch it, that connects with another past injury or past something that's been held and stored there in that cellular memory. When it releases, okay, you can cause all sorts of sounds. Doesn't mean they're suffering in that. If you ask them afterwards, it's they understand that it's a release. It was not a suffering during that time. It's kind of like recognizing and letting go of it. Okay, kind of purging the system of it. So yeah, a lot of different things can happen when you're doing energetic healing with people. Okay, they can go into a very deep meditation during that time. Okay, that's quite common. Okay. But each time you're doing this energy type of work, it goes deeper layer by layer by layer by layer by layer. You start out with physical, then it goes to emotional, then it gets more subtle as you go. And each time they might have a different experience when they come. Okay. I also wanted to talk a little bit, that's the end of the questions in our satsang bowl today, unless somebody else has anything else. So I'll ask for questions from the floor if anybody has any questions, comments. Quiet bunch. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about the difference between taking diksha and taking sannyas. Okay, because there's been some questions about that, especially new people coming in. Taking diksha is when you agree to come under the care and guidance of the guru for your spiritual path. Okay? Doesn't mean that when you take diksha that you can't leave this path. But if you decide you want to go under the care of someone else or you want to leave this path, the protocol is to come to the guru and then just say, you know, I'd like to be released from diksha, because the guru makes a very heavy commitment to this. When they take on a student, they agree to be a guide for them for lifetimes if need be, until they reach realization. It's a commitment. It's a commitment I honor and take very seriously. Any of my students can call me any time, day or night. They can email me. They can come immediately. Okay. So what's expected when you take diksha is to be serious about it and to be open and not chasing other paths. If you're chasing other paths and chasing other modalities and reading from here and there, you can get in confusion. If you're getting in confusion, don't come and say, well, why am I not progressing? You know? It's like if you're, you know, going to school for something and you're being trained in one way, you can't go pick and choose and just do whatever you want in school. Okay? You can't add something else to the curriculum. Okay. Because it only brings confusion in. The guru's job is to get you to realization, to understand what you are, and more importantly, what you're not. The things you've collected that you think you are that are running your life and making your life miserable. You know? All these ideas we collect when we're young. You're stupid, you're ugly, you're whatever it is that's running your life. Whatever you're trying to fix continually. Or to prove wrong, whatever the case may be. So my job is to get you beyond that, to break through that, until you can find that inner core perfection that's always there, Okay. So that's the path of Diksha. If you decide you want to go to another teacher, fine, no problem. Just come and tell me and I will give you my blessings and go. Enjoy your life. Be happy. Okay. But the taking of sannyas is a whole other story. Okay. The taking of sannyas means you are fully committed to this path, to furthering it for yourself and for humanity. And what you own is no longer yours. What you own belongs to God. Your first commitment is to the path, to reaching realization, so you can go forward and help humanity as well, to help humanity in the best way that you can. So taking sannyas is not a joke, okay? It's a very serious commitment, okay? It's not about my life come first and then, okay, I have sannyas and it'll enhance it. Oh, no, no, no. This is no, no, no. This is not what this is about. Taking sannyas means the path comes first. Commitment to that comes first. The rest falls in line. If you're making your commitment correctly, the rest falls in line. And you're not ever asked to give more than what you can give. But this has to be an internal heart commitment. It's a big commitment. It was the same commitment when my guru gave me the commission, it's time for you to go and be a guru. It's a big commitment. And we don't take it lightly. Because whatever the guru is teaching you, they're responsible for that. Carries a very, very heavy karmic load. If I give you something that's wrong, I incur a debt, okay? Okay, so we take this commitment very seriously, working with students. People that are just taking Diksha, okay. You come and you go. But if you take Diksha, realize that it's there for your benefit, okay? And that the guru is trying to give you everything that they can give you to move you forward. So be honest in that commitment. Don't be going chasing other teachers and other modalities and grabbing here and there and getting in confusion and then coming back and saying, well, I don't know why I'm not progressing. Of course, what they leave out is that they're going here and there and adding all this other extraneous things. Yes, there are many paths, and the path and the goal of each path is to get to God awareness, whether it's Christian modality, whether it's Hindu, whether it's Buddhist. What I say, the only difference is the scenery along the way. Okay, but it's only one God. Doesn't matter what's the name. It's one God, and every sage throughout history that explained that, you recognize that it's the same reality. Every sage speaks from that same reality, but they try to bring it into the cultural context of where they're living so that the people that they're dealing with can understand it. Okay. When you come here, even though I use a lot of Hindu symbology, it's very eclectic. If somebody's really Christ-centered, I'll speak from Christ-centered. It doesn't matter. A Buddhist, Hindu, Christ-centered, those are just labels. But there's one inherent truth that runs through all the religions equally. Okay? Against love, there is no law. Okay? I've not come to do away with the law, but to fulfill it. Okay? Not one iota of the law will pass away. Karma. It can't pass away because God is inherently of a certain nature, and so that keeps those laws in place. And they will always be so. If you're going against the flow, then guess what? You're going to incur difficulties in life. When you finally reach that and the rest of this stuff falls away, then you enter the flow of life. It goes much easier than when we're trying to do it under our own steam all the time and row upstream. I guarantee you the journey's much easier if you go downstream with the flow instead of ego trying, no, I need to do this and I'm going to do it no matter what, you know. So yeah, the thing about this path is going within, finding a way to center, allowing the mind to still. When the mind is totally still, then you will find out what is God and what you are and what you're not. And you will be very amazed because the ideas we have about God and the ideas we have about self, I guarantee you, once you see the reality, you will be amazed. It's never what we think it is. So with that, we conclude satsang today. Thank you. Namaste. I welcome you all with great love and respect. We'll go ahead and take a quick break, have some tea, and then we'll reconvene for meditation. Thank you.